Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back, and this is special. My partner Lance Zierlein is part of the industry, and there are not a lot of guys that can say they started an entire industry. And Mel Kiper did that 40-some plus years ago. Guys like Daniel Jeremiah, Matt Miller, Dane Brugler, Mike Mayock, Todd McShay all have well-paying jobs in a lot of circumstances because of this guy. He's the OG. He's the godfather of draft Knicks. He is Mel Kiper here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Mel, welcome to the show. We appreciate you being here.
Great to be with you guys. Love Houston. Love everything about what we're doing this time of year, obviously. And Lance knows all about that. Lance has done an unbelievable job as dad in the NFL. So I'll tell you, to see what he's been able to do, it's just phenomenal to see how popular I think this draft process is. When back when I started, they didn't even want ESPN to televise it. And they said, hey, they told me, well, go get a real job. Nobody cares about this stuff. You're wasting your time. So it's great to see how far the draft has come.
I want to follow up on that. How'd you get, Mel, what was, how, I know this story has been told before, but let's tell people, how did you start that? How did you get connected with ESPN?
Well, it was I had already accepted a position with Ernie Accorsi in the Baltimore Colts back in 1983 after I put out the reports in 78, 79. Got to know Ernie very well when I was just a young kid at Colt camp and gave him the reports. We always kept up, talked all the time, and always went out to camp every summer and spent a lot of time with Ernie. So Ernie offered me that position. He said, he said, just go through the draft that year. I'll introduce you as a Colt employee. And then maybe July, August, right before the season starts. And then, of course, they traded John Elway without his knowledge. He called me and said, hey, I don't know how long I'll be here. The team may be moving. I can't bring you in to help me in the personnel department when that's the case. So what do you want me to do? And he said, just keep doing what you're doing. You got a good thing going. Well, 5 months later, I got a call from ESPN to go up and interview and got that position for the 84 draft and that season. So if I would have taken that job, Ernie wouldn't have cared about a 23-year-old kid and just said, come on in, see what happens. I would have been with the Colts and I would have been let go by the Colts. I would have never gotten the position with ESPN. And who knows what I would have been doing throughout my career.
Who was the guy who had the foresight to bring in a quote-unquote analyst, a quote-unquote scout, an evaluator, into the role when it was such a – it was not the thing that it is today? Who had the foresight to do that?
Bill Fitz did. It was Bill Fitz, was the producer of the draft that year. And I remember going up to ESPN and I sat there in the middle of a room. They put a chair in the middle of a room and they had like 7 or 8 people were like circling around this chair and saying, okay, tell me about the 49er offensive line. Tell me about the Steelers front office. And I did. And then that players in the draft, they were just peppering me with questions about the NFL, about positional groups, coaching, players obviously for the draft. And I just, for about an hour, hour and a half, I answered those questions. Got on a flight, went to Bradley International, flew back the hour flight to Baltimore to beat up Yai, and didn't have a clue. And 2 weeks later, got a call that I was going to be doing Sports Center and doing all the things leading up to the draft.
Wow.
And certainly draft day that year with Chris Berman and Bob Lee up in Connecticut. They were the first two people I met at ESPN. I walked into that one little building in Bristol, and Chris Berman, Boomer, and Bob Lee greeted me. We went up, we did the draft, and did a lot of Sports Center stuff that year, and that was when I was 23 at the time, and the rest is history.
Wow, what a story. And you created an industry. Unbelievable what you've done. Mel Kiper with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. And Lance told the story earlier, Mel, about how nice you were. I mean, you can't be a nicer guy. A young guy like Lance that had no name, and yet you spent time with him. That's got to be rewarding, seeing all these guys that have come up and that you've helped along the way, too.
Well, you encourage. I try to always encourage everybody along the way. Lance, obviously, with the football knowledge that he's had his whole life, been football, and Todd McShay, great kid, played for, he was a Richmond quarterback, and you see Daniel Jeremiah. These are all good. Mike Mayock, good friend of mine. All these people, I work with Mike at ESPN before he became a draft analyst at NFL Network. So all these guys were good friends. The more people that are going to have opinions, the better off everybody is. And I always wanted at ESPN to have somebody to debate me and to. Because I always came across, oh, that's the final. I never want to be the final word. I've always been obviously serious about my business and never took it as any joke or tried to make, you know, tried to be light about it, tried to be serious about it and focused about it. And then to have Todd come along and everybody else come along, and Lance is doing an unbelievable job in all these years. Hell, he could be coaching right now. So, all these guys, look at Mike Mayock, goes into the NFL. Todd could be in the NFL. So, it's just great to see these guys, you know, do what they're doing and the expansion of this whole draft the way it is now, and the coverage and the amount of people that watch, the amount of people on the internet that are doing mock draft every day, there's ratings every day, everybody, the amount of interest in the draft has gone through the roof. And like I said, I've been wrong with a lot of player evaluations. The one thing I've been right on is I thought the draft would be something that would be incredibly popular because it ties college football to the NFL. It's a couple days in April when you're not even seeing the NFL for a while. If you watch college football and you watch the NFL, why in the heck wouldn't you care about this? And back in those days, nobody saw any of these guys, so they needed reports. So I figured, okay, if you're not seeing the guys your team's drafting, why not have this information available? So I had that vision. That was the one thing in my life I was correct about. The draft would be popular, but to think it would ever get to this point, guys, no, I can't say I ever thought it would be as popular right now as it is. I thought it would be popular, but not to this extreme.
Yeah, we call it a draft season, and it's expanded. It's gone from, you know, April into March, then into the combine, and then now Senior Bowl, and really it's even before then, and it's in the TV ratings, the digital numbers.
It's the whole party, the weekend.
The first year I wrote up draft profiles, which was for the 15 draft. I started in 14, 15 draft for NFL.com. My editor told me, he showed me a thing that went out internally. My draft for the full 1 year, I had 15 million hits on my draft reports total. 9 million came inside of like a 3-day span or a 4-day span because there's such an international appeal for football too. And I mean, it's huge. It's huge in London. It's huge in Germany. Mel, let's get to this year's draft class.
Sure.
But because the draft is obviously a huge thing. I want to talk for a second about the Houston Texans obviously have the third pick and now they have the 13th pick. They're at the third pick. This entire time I've been thinking, okay, you know, trade back, you can end up adding more draft capital. But the more I look at this and the more I start to project, I think the Texans are going to be sitting in a spot to either get their hands on Aiden Hutchinson, Evan Neal, Ike Ekwonu. I'm just to the point, Mel, now where I look at this draft class and I say, I don't think you may not want to get too cute with this. You may just want to sit down and take one of those players.
Yeah, it depends on what you. They already have, you know, 7 picks in the first 4 rounds. That's 7 of the top 108. So they're in good shape there. Obviously, they could take anybody. They have pretty needs all over the place, as you know. So they could go any which way, whoever they deem the best player at that point. And if you're picking that high, you got to get one of the elite players in the draft. You can't get the 6th, 7th, 8th best player when you're picking that high. And at 13, they could do the same thing. You know, get a guy that's in your top 10 on your board. And they obviously, you're going to, you know, move those players around to suit whatever you want on your board. But the bottom line is they should get 2 elite players, and they should get a lot of good. There's a lot of good players in this draft that aren't going to go in the first round. It happens every year. There's depth at a couple positions, a wide receiver being one where I like a lot of guys at that position. Well, in the, maybe the 25. I think I could go 25 deep at wide receiver and feel pretty good about it. So, and there's several positions like that. There's a couple weak positions. But now this is a draft with all the picks they have and the development of Davis Mills towards the end of the year, the way he progressed through the season. We'll see how year two is. But they should come out of this draft with some really good football players.
Good question from Clay. Ask Mel how he would rank Evan Neal compared to years past offensive tackles.
Yeah, he's a good. He's a guy with the left tackle, right tackle, guard starting experience. I like to see him play a little past the whistle at times. There's that thing that Trevor Penning does in Northern Iowa, maybe a little too much. That's what Ike Ekwonu does. A lot. very entertaining to watch at NC State. But with Neal, very solid, very reliable player, and the experience that's a start at all three spots adds value, obviously. So he's right there. I think you look at a couple of their offensive linemen. I think Penning is the most intriguing because he's so aggressive. He's so tough. He's got all the talent, but he's so raw. And he doesn't bend. And he's going to have to be probably a right tackle initially. Will he evolve into a left tackle? We'll see. But he could be a pick for the Chargers at 17. But I think he's the guy we're going to have fun watching to see the progression of Trevor Penning. But to say for Evan Neal, I think Evan Neal for the Giants, who would need a right tackle, would be a pick. Obviously, Houston, there's plenty of opportunities for Evan Neal to go within that top five.
Yeah, no question. This is a year where I like some corners, but I'm having a harder time slotting them because there's issues. So Sauce Gardner is going to be the first cornerback off the board, I believe. I do think that Derek Stingley is a guy that if he could, the Liz Frank is going to hurt him, but he would have tested he would have just tested off the charts in a variety of in every potential drill imaginable and testing imaginable, which I think would have shot his profile back up. Let's talk about Stingley, because Stingley was unbelievable in 19, but 20 and 21 just isn't as good. He didn't play as much. He's had injuries. How do you project a guy whose best tape is 2019?
That's a great question. I was talking about it with a former NFL GM who's got a Super Bowl ring, and he said, "Well, I love Stingley, but you told me I had to go back to 2019 to get him at his best." And he said, "I can't take a guy in the top 10. I got to go back to 2019 to see him play his best football." I said, "Well, there's circumstances. You had COVID year, then you had the injury. So there's reasons why that." And then, of course, the LSU in 2019 went 15-0, won a national title, and they lost a lot of his players. Everything changed dramatically. Coaching this year, situation, a lot of turmoil within that program. So I said, there's factors that contribute to that. But he said, "Hey, I can't take a guy top 10 that hadn't played since 2019 his best football." But he said, "Hey," I said, "well, go back to 20. He went back and I talked to him the other day. He said, "Hey, 2019, I mean, he was awesome." The word awesome came out of his mouth. Instincts, ball skills. He was just 17 when he came to LSU, 18 that freshman year. He's only 20 right now. So this is a kid that pro day coming up will be critical. The medical on him will be critical, obviously. Sauce Gardner is clearly the cleanest corner in this draft with his length, his ball skills, and the way he locked down during his career. So Sauce Gardner is going to be the first corner taken. Could go in the top five. But I think Stingley, where he goes, I can't say right now, but some have him dropping. Mike Tannenbaum did a mock the other day. Had him 24 to Dallas. Wow. Some people have him 20, 16. If he gets down that far, if the medical is okay, then I got to believe he's going to be one of the steals. The toughest corner to evaluate, Lance, for me, is Andrew Booth Jr. Yeah. Expected a lot. He's so talented. He hits so hard. I mean, he has no fear. I mean, he throws that body around. Screens will come up and just destroy you. His coverage, the lack of focus at times, the concentration lapses. I don't know what it was, but Andrew Booth Jr. is the toughest corner for me to put a grade on because I see the talent, but I also see the inconsistency. Somebody's going to take him in the first round, but he's one of those boomer bust types. It's hard for me to really get to figure out and feel comfortable about what type of grade I give him.
Matt, I struggle with, I don't know why it is, but I struggle with Clemson cornerbacks every year, and I don't know why that is, but it's hard. A.J. Terrell, it's just harder for me to get a good read on some of these guys. I think the easiest one to, and I wouldn't mind this guy at 13, would be Trent McDuffie from Washington. Yep. I think what you see is what you get. I love him. He's the same kind of Washington cornerback every year. Twitchy, aggressive, on top of the routes. I wouldn't mind him at 13 for the Texans, although I think he may slide back a little further. You wish he was 6 feet, 6 foot one. And then Kyrie Elam, I think I know who he is. I think he'll get drafted early. I've heard, Mel, he's been amazing in interviews, just really highly intelligent, but struggles with long speed and matching up. But the Texans need a cornerback, Mel. And people ask me about cornerbacks. My concern is I don't love the second-round cornerbacks, and I worry that if you don't get one in the first round, that I don't know that you're getting an early-impact cornerback once you get outside of the first round of the first 40 picks.
Yeah, I think Marcus Jones at Houston's going to be a nice player. His return skills will get him on the field right away. Zion McCollum, I thought Sam Houston State was a guy, watching this tape of him in three games was really impressive in those games. Lower level of competition, but really impressive. So I think he's the kind of guy could be a little bit, of a bargain where you get him. But I'll tell you, Lance, I love the safety, Daxton Hill. And, here's the kid. I think you could make a strong argument that, Kyle Hamilton is certainly the best safety. He's the number two safety. But overall, DBs, he's right there with McDuffie. So if you go Hamilton, or Sauce Gardner, that's two. Then you go Stingley, three. Then it's either McDuffie or Daxton Hill for me. I mean, Daxton Hill, slot corner he can be, the way he covers, the way he gets after the quarterback, the way he tackles. Obviously, Justice Hill's brother, five-star recruit, all that. Daxton Hill can do everything. He's so versatile. I love the kid. I think he should be in that mix to be a mid-first rounder. So he's the kind of guy nobody even talks about because he's a safety behind Hamilton, but he's more than that. Like I say, he's a slot corner. Go to the Ohio State game, watch him there. I think not enough people have talked and mentioned Daxton Hill's name enough when we talk about those elite overall defensive backs that are kind of ideally suited for the way the game's played today.
He's versatile. Yeah. I mean, he's really versatile.
Mel, do you have Kyle Hamilton falling at all because of how he's running?
I don't. I mean, I think I could see him a little bit past the top group, but to get down, some people thought, I think Daniel had him going like 11 at one point, Daniel Jeremiah. I don't, but stranger things have happened when you run like he did, which is not as good as you would have thought. Of course, it came off the injury as well. But Kyle's, he's not the best safety I've ever seen. He's not the elite, the best of all time like some are making him out to be. But I think the range he has, the unique talent that he has for the position. Is he the best safety? No. But his unique talent, I think, will make a defensive coordinator or force a defensive coordinator look at him a lot higher than that. That's just my opinion, but I think he's the third or fourth best player in the draft. Some have him number one. I didn't see that. I still have Aiden Hutchinson number one, Ekwonu two. Sauce Gardner's got to be up there. I mean, there's no way you can't put a corner with the length, the ball skills, and the way he was, consistency on the field. They all went after Kobe Bryant. He was just spectacular. So I think Sauce Gardner has got to be up there in one of the top five, six best players in this draft.
All right, so you're uniquely positioned. I'd say I am here on the show every day, but I want to get your perspective on this. It's not going to happen, but a lot of Texans fans want the Texans to consider Malik Willis. I'll throw Kenny Pickett's name in there as well. Malik Willis, but let's throw Kenny Pickett. So they have three and they have 13. You know all about Davis Mills and what he was coming out and potentially what he was this year. What would, if you were the Texans, would you seriously be considering one of those two quarterbacks I mentioned at either 3 or 13, or would you roll with what you've seen from Davis Mills, what you thought his draft profile was and projection was coming into the league, and would you try to make the best of it and keep projecting him and filling in the pieces around him since it's a lot cheaper to go with the third round guy?
Yeah, it's a hard call. That's a difficult question to answer. Malik Willis, I just did a new ratings board. It's going to be up on Monday, Tuesday of this week. And I was trying to move him up. I said, I got him to 16. I got Malik at 16, Kenny Pickett at 17. They've been back-to-back pretty much the whole way. I couldn't go any higher. I just, on a ratings board, that's just how it, so if you're picking that high, you got to get a guy that's rated that high. You got to trust your ratings. Malik Willis is, I think, in 2-3 years is going to really start to develop, and he needs some time, and Kenny's going to be 24 coming up, and he's had all those starts. I compared him to Derek Carr. If he's Derek Carr, you'd be pretty happy getting him, right? But that's the best scenario. Our comps are best-case scenario. They always work out. The comps aren't always perfect here. We know that. They give you an idea. They're not exact. So to me, and you have a crystal ball, you know, all of that, predict the future, but I think that's high. It's a little high for me. 13 would be okay. Not in the top five. Some have them to two to Detroit. I don't see that. I think it's difficult because next year you're going to have the elite. You're going to have Bryce Young from Alabama. You're going to have C.J. Stroud from Ohio State. So, you got to be sure that in a consensus within your building that Malik Willis or Kenny Pickett are going to be really, really good. And an improvement over Davis, who I thought made really good strides this year. I remember talking to David Shaw. I saw David at the draft. Lance was about, back when he was just young. Davis Mills was young. He said, I said, what do you think? Because he had gotten so much hype coming out of high school. I said, what's your opinion? He looked at me and he said, no, he's going to be really, really good. He's going to be really good. And, of course, he had the injuries. He had that one year, the COVID year and all that. But the bottom line is, depending upon how the Texans feel about Davis Mills, how do you got to love these quarterbacks. You got to be thinking about next year as well. So that's a tough spot. To say 13, if they took a quarterback at 13, Malik or Kenny Pickett, I would have no problem with that. But Davis Mills deserves a lot of positive publicity for the job he did. I mean, I thought he was impressive the way he improved, the way he finished. I thought there were some things that I really like and be excited about Davis Mills. But in this league, if you're in the AFC, you got to have a great quarterback. I mean, you just can't be good. You got to be great. You can't be average. You got to be great.
Yeah.
So the one that has a chance to be great of this group is Malik Willis from Liberty.
Did you like the haul the Texans got for Deshaun?
You know, I think it was the best scenario possible. I don't like the Cleveland thing. AFC, another great quarterback. If, depending upon how everything off the field works out and the suspension and what goes on there, and you never know. You can't predict the future on that. That's still you got to wait and see how that plays out. But I thought he was going to go to Carolina. I thought Tepper, the owner, was going to do everything possible to get Deshaun Watson. The NFC is a league that doesn't have all the elite quarterbacks the AFC does. You put him to Carolina, with Tampa Bay. Brady can't play forever. New Orleans is trying to figure it out. Jameis off the injury. And then you have Atlanta with Matt Ryan. You knew that would be a situation fluid there. They trade him. Now they're rebuilding there. I thought it would be Atlanta. It was going to look like that day it was going to be Atlanta, and then it ended up being the Cleveland Browns. So, was I happy with what they got? Yeah, I think Houston's in a great spot now to add a lot of pieces and get some real foundation pieces in this draft that will allow them to be a team in that division, obviously, when you think about where they are right now. Indianapolis has a veteran quarterback that they can win with. Jacksonville's got a potential star. And they just have to figure out, what's the ceiling? What's the ceiling for how good do we think after we've had him for a year? They know how he works. They know how the team feels. Does he galvanize those guys? Do they react to him? Does he excite the masses there? How does everybody in that building feel about Davis Mills is critical in this whole decision? Nobody knows that answer better than they do.
Absolutely. That's Mel Kiper, the godfather of the draft, of all these guys can owe it all to him. He's the Tiger Woods. I'm calling you the Tiger Woods of the draft, Mel, because you make
money. Way overrated. I've always been overrated in that regard, but I appreciate it, because I'm just glad that everybody's enjoying this whole thing, have fun with it, and Lance has been a great friend and does an incredible job. So it's just great to see all this stuff happening and so positive, and I hope the Texans come out of this draft with a lot of good players.
You know what's crazy is Mel, you're still in Maryland, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we moved down to Kent Island. We moved down to the Eastern Shore about 5 years ago. Lauren got married this past summer. So a lot has happened, Lance. It's a play the draft days.
Connecticut, right? You still do things your way. You still get to do things the way you like to do them. You get to live where you live and do your shows from remotely. I mean, it's still, you've got things working the way you need to get it, way you want to have it worked.
Exactly. I'm here we're here on the water, looking out at the bay, and the beautiful, and the boating, and the crabbing, the fishing, everything going on here. So, I just love the scenario we're in. Everything about it couldn't be better. And like I said, Lauren's down here, and Alex are every weekend, so they're here. They're going to start a family soon. So it's just really a good scenario down here. We love it down here, and we're able, with Glowpoint, as you said, to do everything remotely.
It's good to be Mel Kiper, especially this time of year, draft season. Hey, Mel, we appreciate it. Thanks for your time. Great stuff, as always. Congratulations on all your success, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Mel.
I appreciate it. Anytime you guys need me, give me a call, and a great job. You guys do a phenomenal job.
All right, there's Mel Kiper right here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. What good stuff.
That was not meant for you. You don't do a phenomenal job. You got John McClain caping for you. Mel was talking to me.
No, he was telling me. He said you guys. He said you guys.
You do a terrible job.
He said you too. He said you guys.
You know why? Because you gave him special loving when he came on the air.
I really did.
And on the end, the back end, I was like,
I really did.
Hey,
I got to get these
knee
pads off.
I feel some civil suits coming.
I brought my little towel, okay, with me. And
did you just meet Mel Kiper 30 minutes outside of the city of Houston at someone's mom's house?
Yeah.
What happened?
I sure did.
With your own towel?
Mel's got to feel good right now. Okay?
That was consensual.
He's gonna
consensual. Mel liked
consensual.
That was consensual.
No, he's probably smoking a cigarette right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right after that.
You were the Tiger Woods. He was like, well.
All right. I didn't say it. You said it.
Well, I mean, you said.
That's what you said.
It's like when people call us heroic.
No.
We're not saying it.
No, it's those people.
Do we do hero stuff? Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Like doing shows when it's very cold or whatever.
Yeah.
It rains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean. You want to call it heroic. We don't tend to do that, but
sometimes we do. It's 823 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. And still ahead, Daniel Ewing is going to join us in about an hour right here. Don't you go anywhere. We got, hey, when we come back, Doc Rivers, a little shot. No. A little shot at James Harden. We'll give it to you on the other side.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.